to a wonderful meal with a wonderful woman.
Welcome to Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast covering many, many years of Cartoon Network's history.
You're so nice.
I'm Funky. I'm Fresh.
Hi, the Powerpuff Girls.
Hi. Not now, boy. I'm busy. Tonight's the third night.
What's cooking, Toonheads? It's your frantic home chef and host, B-Dubs. And this is Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast dedicated to all things animation from the 1990s and early 2000s. Today, we're busting out the cookbook and doing our best to make a memorable first impression with this little What a Cartoon short from the series library. It's a cartoon called The Kitchen Casanova. Say that 10 times fast. And it's one I remember well from my early days when I used to watch Cartoon Network at my grandma's. Ready to make a mess in the kitchen? Let's jump in and see what this episode is all about. So starting off, the episode info is pretty straightforward. The air date was November 6, 1996, and it was episode 12A among three shorts per episode, so it was the first one that showed up of the half-hour block. It was written, created, and directed by John McIntyre. And the meat of the episode is as follows. We fade into your typical suburban cartoon house, where a pot of mystery food is boiling on the stove, and an adult male is taking a whiff to see how it's doing. Enter our main character, Casanova, who is voiced by Carlos Alazraki, which makes more sense than you'd imagine. He's getting dinner ready for a special lady, a blonde bombshell named Doris, who's got a touch of OCD too. Casanova's dog, Pudge, couldn't care less about the event, as long as he's being fed. But Casanova responds to his canine companion by shoving a framed picture of his love interest into his face. Pudge growls at the photo of Doris, inferring that the two have met before and have engaged in conflict. We cut to the front of the driveway where Doris speeds in with perfect timing in her powder blue car. But before she can make it to the door, she has to inspect it to make sure all the stains and crooked mirrors are in line. Back in the kitchen, Casanova smooches his date's photo, daydreaming how his date will unfold just moments later. He goes on to recite over some red wine to a wonderful meal with a wonderful woman. The doorbell pops his fantasy, though, causing him to accidentally slice his finger off while cutting carrots for the meal. He panics, plugs the spurting wound, then dashes into his bathroom, screaming while bandaging it up. Only he ended up reattaching the carrot top onto his finger, which is a fun visual gag. We cut back to the front door, where Doris rings the doorbell, eager with anticipation. She scrapes the lipstick off her teeth while waiting. Shifting back to the bathroom, Casanova finally has his finger reattached. But then he notices in the mirror that all the running around has made his slick back hair quite messy. He throws on some hair gel into his hands and then reshapes it frantically as the clock ticks down. Meanwhile, Doris is getting impatient and searches all around the perimeter of the house, just missing her date as he answers the door hoping to greet her. After a moment of back and forth trying to find each other through doors, windows, and bushes, they finally sync up, albeit Casanova is a bit agitated by now. He apologizes for the misunderstanding while Pudge walks into the stoop barking at her, and Doris's date invites her in with a bit of alluring charm. In comical fashion, the door is then slammed in Pudge's face. She seems less than enthused, and we're already off to a not-so-great start. Cut to the dining room where Casanova recreates his toast to his romantic interest. But just as he wraps his arm around hers, the timer in the kitchen grinds the mood to a halt. Casanova leaps to the kitchen, but not before being slingshotted back to the table due to his arm still wrapped around his date's. Turns out the home chef left his kitchen operation alone for a little bit too long and everything's boiling over. He quickly shakes the timer to stop it from ringing, but he drops it in a boiling pot of green liquid instead. Not thinking, he immediately reaches in, burns his arms, and then runs around screaming some more. It's honestly enough chaos to cause his date Doris to accidentally scribble lipstick all over her face and triggers her more OCD tendencies to happen again, such as straightening a picture on the wall nearby and wiping it off real quick. Casanova perseveres by shoving a much too large chicken into the oven for the main course, while Pudge launches himself back inside via the mail slot, and Doris polishes her plate so well she can see herself sparkle in it. She then feeds her quirk by straightening more photos, vacuuming the carpet in the living room, and even mopping floors in an empty bedroom before Casanova shouts, "All right!" In a hurry, she scampers back to her seat, acting as if she was sitting pretty there this entire time. We resume with Casanova continuing his toast to his lovely date, but not before she spots black smoke billowing out from the kitchen doorway.
"Now, where were we? Ah, yes. A toast to...
something's burning."
"Yes, indeed. Something is burning."
Oh boy, here we go again. Turns out the chicken was left on too high of a heat setting, as it's already charred beyond edibility. Panicking, Casanova flings the oven door open and catapults the doomed roast straight out the window, landing on his date's car. He watches through the broken glass as her slick ride goes up in flames. "Doing great so far, buddy." I just love how he ignores his mishap by slowly lowering the window blind. Seems like the least of his problems right now. While Doris impatiently waits at the table with Pudge growling at her hungry stomach, Casanova tries to remedy the snafu by tossing a simple salad. I mean, there's only 3 ingredients in the recipe. How could he possibly mess this up? Well, try as he may to follow instructions, a cool breeze meanders through the broken window to turn the pages to various different recipes in the cookbook, and not realizing what he's adding into his appetizer, he just continues pulling different ingredients of increasing absurdity from cupboards all over the room and adding it into the mix. Back in the dining room, Doris notices a funky smell, one radiating from Pudge sleeping nearby. Immediately, Casanova's date pulls out a series of cleaning supplies, intending to scrub the scent right out of him. Meanwhile, Casanova continues adding crazier ingredients to the main course meal, including some from swine stew, beastie feast, lizard lunch, porcupine pie, and more. It's so overwhelming, the home chef falls straight through the checkered floor. Ouch, that's gotta hurt. Once again, Doris detours to another room since she can't sit still. This time, she's giving Pudge a bath with a crazed, frenzied look in her eye. That is, until Casanova beckons her with a call. Leaving Pudge sudsy and irked in the bathtub, Doris hastily runs back to her seat, eager to eat. Casanova peeks his head out of the kitchen, then does a slithery dance to the dinner table to unveil the main course. It's about time. Turns out it's, I don't know what it is, but it's green, it's got hair, a tongue, an eyeball, bones, other mystery slop, and entrails mixed all together, so yeah. If you thought that eating odd animal parts on that show Fear Factor was off-putting, this quote-unquote gourmet meal takes the cake for repulsiveness. Blech. Doris shrieks, as you'd expect. Then Casanova falls suit, realizing all of his hard work to create a perfect meal for his dinner date turned into a delicatessen disaster. The tongue of the dish unfurls, and rightfully so, Casanova breaks down in tears. It can't get much worse than this. While he buries his head in shame at the table, Doris feels sorry for him. In an uncharacteristic move, she apprehensively digs her fork into the green glob of gook and takes a bite. But wait, she actually likes the taste of it. Wow. She goes back for another bite, and then Casanova tentatively takes one too. The mystery meat of the night is apparently so good, they are hypnotized into eating all of it in a frenzy. What happens next? Well, let's just say it's a primal urge of feasting. And once the food has been devoured, they continue to fuel their craving by eating plates, a tablecloth, and even breaking off table legs to chomp on. I don't think a kid should be watching this kind of unfettered urge play out, but, you know, it's the 90s. Crazy stuff always happens in cartoons, right? Anyways, they both grab a wooden table leg and chomp it to the center point like Lady and the Tramp do with spaghetti. And they finally connect through their romantic feelings for each other with an endearing kiss. Casanova's hair springs out of shape, and they embrace, emanating hearts all over the place. While this love fest is happening, a sopping wet, disgruntled Pudge returns from the bathtub. He growls at one of the floating hearts nearby, swallows it with one chomp, then burps up several transitioning into the end screen where dirty dishes are piled high in the kitchen sink. And that's our episode. It went by like a whipping roller coaster, but here we are. So usually with episode reviews, as this is the first one of the podcast, we're going to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 checkers, because this is Checker Childhood and it seems fitting. I would say I'm going to give Kitchen Casanova 8.5 checkers out of 10. Considering how John McIntyre was working at the time as a storyboard artist, it's clearly evident that Rocko's Modern Life had an influence on this story. Episodes from that show like Dirty Dog, Love Spanked, and even just Rocko interacting with his dog Spunky in the kitchen feel very akin to the manic energy here. Perhaps this is what a date would look like if Rocko ever had Melba over for dinner? Only one can speculate. As shocking and gross as the climax may be by today's standards, it's still right in line with the edgy underground animation of the time, appearing everywhere. You know, where artists had free rein to tell their stories without having to worry about regulations or network censors telling them what not to do. The pacing is consistent until it ramps up for the main course unveiling, and then we get a clear sense of how each character reveals their anxieties of making a good impression for the other person. Kitchen Casanova just wants everything to be perfect, cooking the food just right, while Doris just wants to be all neat and pretty and every hair is in place, everything's clean and shiny. Gotta look great for the date. Lord knows we've all been there at least once. The animation style, just to further add, is a bit crude, but I don't mean that in an incompetent way. On the contrary, its rough, wiggly, lime-vibrating look really lends to the expressions and actions that all three characters experience throughout the short, and I appreciate the charm as a side effect. It's very similar to, like, Dr. Katz's Professional Therapist, that animated show on Comedy Central. I'm trying to think what else uses that squiggly line effect, but you get the idea. Overall, this 2D animated What a Cartoon short sticks out to many who witness it on TV growing up in the mid-90s, as well as those who still comment on the YouTube uploads of it to this day with their nostalgic memories. I've read several myself while making this recording and writing these notes, and their sentiments are very similar as my own, just being one of those deep, random memories that really sticks in your brain, and once you see it again, it just unlocks a whole flood of nostalgia and emotions, what you felt at the time. It's pretty fun to share, and know that you're not alone in watching weird animation on Cartoon Network. Just to go on a little bit further, I'd say it's a fun, simple concept that does physical, visual comedy well, and it proved to be a great method for the storyboard artist, John McIntyre, to flex his creative muscles before working on various projects afterwards. Some like Hey Arnold, Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, and many more. It's a shame that Kitchen Casanova wasn't picked up as a series, but the concept does feel very one-note. I'm sure animation lovers like you and I can only speculate that if the Kitchen Casanova went on to have a family with Doris, or go on different dates where he had to cook other revolting meals to win their affection, we'd see a lot more of similar kind of comedy there. A little bit of darkness mixed with extreme outrageous reactions. I mean, maybe one day someone will rise to the challenge to make the sequel short, but for now, we have the nostalgia. So, I did find a few interesting tidbits while researching this episode, and while there isn't much on the internet about the short, aside from the fact that John McIntyre made it, I did find a cookbook that was released in January 1st, 1990, over on Amazon called The Kitchen Casanova, A Gentleman's Guide for Gourmet Entertaining. I cannot confirm this for sure, but maybe the creator got some inspiration from seeing this in a bookstore one day. I also want to add that Mary Kay Bergman, who voices Doris in this short, would go on to lend her voice expertise in most female roles in South Park just 1 year later when the show premiered. She's done a lot of voice work throughout the industry, and there's too many titles to mention here, But I'm sure if you IMDb it, you'll get a good idea of what she's accomplished and if you recognize any of her roles. As for the other voice actor, Carlos Alzraki, obviously you know him from Camp Lazlo on Cartoon Network and Rocko's Modern Life on Nickelodeon, even Winslow as Cat Dog, among many other roles he's also done. It's the teacher named Crocker on Fairly Odd Parents. You know who I'm talking about. And then we have Frank Welker, who voiced Pudge the Dog. He has his fingerprints all over the animation industry, and he's provided his talents for many, many roles, including Droopy, Go-Go Dodo from Tiny Toon Adventures, Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, and even Nibbler from Futurama. The guy's an animal virtuoso, on par with like Dee Bradley Baker, who does Momo and Appa from Avatar The Last Airbender. I gotta stop mentioning Nickelodeon on this show. This is a Cartoon Network podcast for Pete's sakes. Just to wrap up with the trivia, this episode was later banned on Cartoon Network in 1999 for being too graphic for children. The standards and practices claim that showing a finger cut being cut off with spurting blood was the nail in the coffin for the short to be pulled. But thankfully, it still exists thanks to fans and even John McIntyre himself as it's uploaded to his own YouTube channel. So check that out if you want to see it firsthand of what we got to see back in the 90s. As for my memories of the Kitchen Casanova short, well, it was one of the more notable What Cartoon shorts for me personally. I do remember watching it at dinner time back in 1996 while my grandma babysat me because my dad was working late and my mom was at night classes in hopes of becoming a real estate agent and earning her license. Oftentimes, we would cook meals together and prepare so that she would teach me life skills. And we made something that looked like some sort of flattened breaded chicken with green beans. I did remember it tasted good and a lot better than what Casanova made for his date. So maybe that's why the memory still links with me, because I love food. But other than that, I can't tell you why the memory is that vivid and detailed. There was another memory where I worked at a certain yellow and green branded sandwich shop on the West Coast back in 2013 while I was still finding my way in adulthood. And I remember getting one customer during my shift that day because I was working in one of the least popular branches of this sandwich shop. Anyways, Pink Lady with a fancy furry purple hat with glasses showed up and she asked for a ham sandwich footlong. But for oddly enough reason, I got like really panicky trying to find all the ingredients for her sandwich because I think we ran out of all of them at the time. So I was like looking for the sliced ham, like where's the ham? Why is it not in the freezer? And I found it behind the shredded lettuce package and almost got locked in the freezer. But when I was getting out, I was just like trying to put it together so that I wasn't keeping her from going to her Bible study thing that she had to go to. And she was stopping by here to get her sandwich. And of course, because she was trying to hold a conversation with me and I was trying to, you know, put on a good impression, like I know what I'm doing, even though I've only worked here for a couple months, I ended up slicing my finger just like Casanova and the blood got all over the sandwich and she started freaking out. I started freaking out. I had to wrap up my finger using a paper towel and some tape from the deli paper and get rid of the sandwich and remake it again. And the whole experience was very, it makes you feel vulnerable because you don't really know how to handle those situations when they arise thinking it couldn't happen to you. But when it does, So I had to call my supervisor. I had to get patched up. We had to get the first aid kit replenished because it didn't have any Band-Aids in it, of course. And that marked the end of my time working at that shop because I didn't want to risk damaging my delicate hands further since I do art on the side. And as a result, that's why I remember it. And it came to mind when I watched this episode. So there's a fun little side tangent story for you. Yep. I think if anything else, what I learned from the experience and from watching this short is that haste does make waste and knives cut deep, so you better watch out. All it takes is a split second of distraction to turn a calm situation to turmoil, so it helps to know what you're doing and take safety precautions when necessary. So with all that being said, why does the Kitchen Casanova actually matter in Cartoon Network history? Why does it matter applicable to life? I'd say it's a prime example of first date jitters. Most of us have been in a position where we want to make a positive first impression for the other person, but despite our best efforts, we still get rejected and things go awry. I mean, the simple idea of the short does make it highly relatable. And sometimes we find out in life that if we try hard enough to get something we want in life, whether it's someone else's affection or to create something special, like the meal in this case, we don't actually have to try that hard to just be ourselves and what naturally comes to us, because when we do, we're loved anyways. And it became apparent to me after they were chomping on the table and Casanova's hair just kind of sproinged all out of place that they were just being themselves, even if it was kind of crazy and unhinged and unlike their prim and proper versions that we saw earlier in the short. So that's something to think about. It's also worth knowing that, you know, cooking is flipping hard and the struggle to keep track of multiple things, you know, cooking without burning or going awry is very real for either beginner or home chefs like me. I've dealt with that many occasions when preparing meals at home, so I'm sure if you've done something similar, you can relate to Casanova's experiences too. I'm just going to add here that in the context of Cartoon Network history, this short is unfortunately a footnote of the CN timeline, but it was pivotal in John McIntyre taking what he learned from his time working on Rocko's Modern Life to hone his craft and allow him to get into other Cartoon Network related projects like, as mentioned before, Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, and even doing other Nickelodeon stuff like Hey Arnold as well. And I think that if he didn't have that experience and work with all those projects, I don't think they would have the same appeal without his contribution, even if it may seem minuscule or invisible to the average viewer. So that's something to think about. And I think this is an important part of our Cartoon Network nostalgia. So yeah, I'd say The Kitchen Casanova does matter in these ways. All right, I think it's about time to wash the dishes and clean up after our wild date, but have you ever had a date with someone that seemed to go awry at first but ended up working out in the end? This is our closing question. Share with me in the comments on YouTube or by emailing me at checkerchildhood@gmail.com. If you happen to enjoy this episode, if you enjoyed this banter and you want to hear more episode reviews of different Cartoon Network shows, you can also rate and review this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to it on your preferred podcast platforms. I'm also on iHeartRadio, Deezer, Pandora, all sorts of places, so check this out. There's no excuse. If you do happen to share a review and take the time to write something thoughtful for me, I'll be sure to share it with our fellow listeners in a future episode during our fan letter segment. Don't forget to tell a friend, too, about this podcast so they can enjoy and be informed of the various CN topics we cover through sweet, sensual waves of nostalgia. I think that's all the time we have for now, though. Check in with me next time when we put a certain animal spy under a magnifying glass and see how he's changed for the better or worse in the span of 30 years between his psychedelic and radical selves. Just who am I referring to exactly? You'll have to find out in episode 6 when we do a comparison of this character from Cartoon Network history. Thank you, fellow Toonheads, for being here today. It was a lot of fun to share these wild, chaotic Checker childhood memories with you, and I'm glad you're taking time out of your day to bask in the nostalgic memories of Classic Cartoon Network with me. Hopefully you join in again and we can do it again soon. In the meantime, I have to get dinner ready for my wife. I've been watching a lot of cooking shows lately, so here's hoping I can bake this porcupine pie we're having for dessert to perfection, or at least to her liking. Have a tunerific day, my friends. Ah! The oven's burning. Crap! Later!